Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to take a look at Mars's upcoming conjunction with Saturn in the sign of Pisces. One of the reasons that this is an incredibly significant transit is that Mars is the recent ruler of the solar eclipse in Aries. Whatever the ruler of an eclipse is doing right around the time of an eclipse becomes very important in order to understand the significations of the eclipse and the themes that are most likely to accompany it. An eclipse doesn't act alone. It acts in the total context of the sky. So understanding that this solar eclipse in Aries, which is the domicile of Mars, is happening right as Mars and Saturn are conjoining in Pisces becomes really important. So anyway, that is our agenda for today. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and reflections. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a story to tell about the solar eclipse, use the hashtag grabbed, or email us grabbed@nightlightastrology.com with your story. Tell us the story as concisely as you can and name the transit. We really appreciate that. That is the most likely way that we're going to be able to share the story effectively in our storytelling episodes. So anyway, you can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. There are a couple of things I want to share with you that I am promoting right now. One of them is an upcoming talk. Our monthly webinar series continues this month of April. If you go to the events page on the website and click on live talks, you will see the last in our series on the outer planets in love is happening on April 18th. I'm giving a talk called Uranus in Love. And that's April 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. It's on Zoom. When you register, you get a link sent to you so you can attend live. If you cannot make it, you get a recording link sent to you afterward. This talk, we're going to be looking at the significations of Uranus when it's in your birth chart and configured to the topic of love and relationships, say through the seventh house or Venus, or transits from Uranus to your natal Venus, to your seventh house, etc. We'll be looking at a lot of other conditions as well, but we're going to be talking about how Uranus asks us to heal, grow, change, transform as it affects us specifically within the realm of love, sex, and relationships. So anyway, check that talk out. Hope to see some of you there. That's coming up on April 18th, just a couple of days before Jupiter and Uranus can join in the sign of Taurus. The other thing I want to point you to is the new round of courses that are beginning in June. There is year two in Horary for those who are already enrolled in Nightlight programs, or if you have a background in traditional astrology, you're welcome to join the upcoming Horary course, which begins in June. But the first year certification course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, a one-year immersion into Hellenistic astrology, begins on June 16th. At the end of today's episode, if you stick around after I sign off, I have created about a 10-minute video, or maybe it's like 8 minutes, diving into what the course includes, why it's unique, why I think you might like it. And so you can check that out at the end. The one thing I will say briefly is that it's almost an entire year worth of courses. There's 30 classes on the year. They're held by webinar, but all the recordings are hosted online. So you can attend live or remotely at your own pace. This never expires, so it's lifetime access to the program and all of its contents. We have interactive group forum discussions staffed with tutors and breakout study sessions staffed with tutors in between major units of study. So there's a lot of support built into the program and as much supplemental reading, bonus material, quizzes, homework as you want. It's really based on the program is set up in a way that supports people who want to go pro or who are maybe just doing it because this is your hobby. Either way, check it out at the bottom of the page. Also, don't miss early bird payment saves you $500 off 12 monthly payments on a payment plan or need-based tuition assistance. If you're someone who really wants to take this program, but you need a little help to make it happen, we understand that people are coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds. We support that. So check that out and we hope it might help. All right. On that note, now we are heading into today's talk on Mars and Saturn in Pisces. Get myself organized here. Okay, there we go. So the conjunction of Mars and Saturn in Pisces is happening. Let's take a look at the timeline first. You're going to give it about a 3-degree range within which the significations really start to show up. So that dates back for us to right around Saturday, April 6th. Now, the two planets then continue to come together slowly. Here, Tuesday, April 9th, you can see they're just about a degree apart. Tomorrow, Wednesday, April 10th, they come together. And then by Thursday, April 11th, they're separating, give it about 3 degrees of separation. And you get Monday, April 15th as the kind of total separation from Saturn within the 3-degree engagement range that ancient astrologers used. So put that at about a week from right now. But the most intense part of the transit you are likely to feel this week, today, tomorrow, Thursday, in the wake of the solar eclipse. Let's back up and remind ourselves of what just happened yesterday. So here we have the solar eclipse on Monday, April 8th. And that's happening as Mars is coming to within about a degree of Saturn, as the ruler of the North Node, the ruler of Venus, the ruler of Mercury retrograde, and the ruler of the solar eclipse in Aries. So there's a lot of Mars. It's a lot of Mars. Now, what we have to ask ourselves is, what does it mean? What does it mean that Mars is conjoining Saturn as the ruler of the eclipse? And in doing so, in the watery, double-bodied, feminine sign of Pisces, the home sign of Jupiter, the exaltation of Venus, all these little details add up. So now that we've taken a look at the real-time clock, I'll pull it back up in a second to show you one other little detail. But I want to start by just reminding us, just a simple basic lesson in astrology. Mars and Saturn in Pisces, you have different levels at which you can interpret that pairing. There's always, okay, Mars-Saturn. What do Mars-Saturn do together in general? On an archetypal level, what is a Mars-Saturn combination like, regardless of if it's a conjunction, a trine, a sextile, a square, regardless of what type of aspect is connecting Mars to Saturn, what do Mars and Saturn do when they get together? And that is always the most basic level at which we need to start an understanding of a planetary aspect. If you can do that and you develop that skill as even just a hobby consumer of astrology, you're going to get things right in terms of your ability to accurately assess or interpret the conditions of the planets. You're going to get things right like at least 50 to 60% of the time because you're going to nail the basic archetypal combination. Then to get a little bit more accurate, you have to start including more and more details. For example, what does it mean that they're conjoined rather than opposed? What does it mean that they're in the sign of Jupiter, a feminine water sign, and the exaltation of Venus? And where are those planets in the sky right now? How are they configured to those planets in the sky right now? And oh, by the way, did you notice that Mars is conjoining Saturn as Mars is the ruler of a solar eclipse that just happened? So all of this, there's a whole world. I mean, literally, it's like a tapestry just filled with so much information. The question becomes, how do we access that information in a way that doesn't overwhelm us, that can make sense out of the sky and make sense of a Mars-Saturn conjunction without becoming just gobbledygook, you know, like just it starts all of a sudden we put it all together. We go, what does it mean? All of these things. And you go, you're going to be a healer. You know, you're going to go through a transformational crisis. So we have to try, which all may be true, but we have to try to put the details together in a way that actually delineates the archetype more specifically, so that you go from looking at a big tapestry full of images to more specific combinations of images. And then the themes and images that you come up with because of the refinement of all of those details lead to a more accurate, an accurate ability to describe or predict. And of course, in hindsight, it helps us to assess those details so we can understand what we're looking at in reflection. So any level of looking at transits, past, present, or future, require that we gradually learn how to add more things in. I say gradually because if you try to do it too quickly, most of the time we get overwhelmed. And then it's gobbledygook, and then we're all just, you know, shamans floating around the ethers. All right, so number one thing we'll start with is general Mars-Saturn significations. Mars is the gas pedal. Saturn is the brakes. So when you get the two of them together in any combination, you're working with a refinement of the gas and brake pedals together. Obviously, the best thing you can learn is how to have a cooperative relationship between, you know, acceleration, will, force, drive, speed, exertion, power, and restraint, discipline, maturity, discernment, all factors that Saturn can bring when combined with Mars. You also have to deal with the limiting factors of Saturn, like being overly conservative or afraid or restrictive or doubtful or controlling. and Mars is less risk averse. And so, you know, Mars is going to take those risks and sometimes has to tell Saturn to chill out a little bit. So they, you know, Saturn can inflect itself upon Mars and offer Mars a container that's mature and wise, like a discipline in the life of an athlete, or a, you know, discipline in the life of a martial artist or something like that. These are Mars Saturn ideas that come to my mind right away. But there's also the sense in which Mars inflects itself upon Saturn and says, you know, don't be so controlling, don't be so conservative. Your conservative energy is acting as a prohibition or a block or a something that's trying to limit or restrict movement. And so you have to chill out a little bit. So it can also be like an unstoppable force meets an immovable object kind of situation. The gas and the brake pedal, the you know, unstoppable force and the immovable object. The two coming together are often required when we have to go through tests that require a lot of effort and work and maturity and focus, and they test our mettle, and we might have to work through conflicts or frustrations and be persevering, but we also have to do so with great maturity and discernment. We have to do so with great focus and discipline. It's a doing hard things and doing them well. Mars Saturn can also come up when things explode or break, like, you know, whether it's you know, pulling a muscle or, you know, breaking an arm or something. Now, hopefully, you know, none of that, I hate to even utter those things because I don't like putting it out there, you know, but it's like, there's legitimately a way in which, you know, limits, boundaries, barriers are broken through. And sometimes forcefully and destructively with, there's a kind of, it can be kind of a menacing quality to Mars and Saturn, but, you also have this idea of how do you carefully build and construct something where, you know, there's labor and effort, Mars significations, but there is a kind of restraint and methodical way in which you go about doing something. And oftentimes those things are rewarded when the two planets come together, whereas, you know, being overly restrictive or overly forceful end up meeting with some kind of karmic consequence. So the two planets are also very good under pressure. I heard a colleague of mine say this once, and I never forgot it because I really agreed with it, which is that, you know, if you're under a deadline and you have to get something done really quickly and it's a high pressure situation, Mars Saturn is pretty good for that. Mars Saturn is also quite frequently associated with the significations of military, armed conflict, strict and sort of zealous warlike dogmas, like the kinds of things that people will die for, the kinds of things that people will fight for with a kind of militaristic or fanatical religious or political points of view, and also just, you know, like the healthy version of having principles that you stick to and fight for or act on behalf of. So these are all things that can come up now. When the two planets are conjoined, the archetypal qualities are blended, and you often see the conjunction of two planets blends their significations together. Rather than each planet having a dialogue, it is as though the two are being mutually inflected upon one another, and it's as though a third thing emerges, you know, a Smars. a Mars Saturn. So we get this kind of blending of the two archetypes. So these are the kinds of things that are coming this week. Now, when you pair that alongside of the fact that Mars was the ruler of the solar eclipse and a large stellium in Aries, that's when it gets really a lot more specific. And that layer of information, despite all the other levels or layers available to us, is probably the most important. Aries is a tropical sign. It's a fire sign. It's a masculine sign. It's where the sun and Mars are exalted. Aries acts with tremendous force and vigor and speed and intensity on behalf of a few things. You know, the blazing of a trail or the staking of a claim or the choosing of a path with great determination and kind of a heroic kind of quest motif. Now, there's also Aries is also often concerned with individuation, the need to feel and be strong in one's self. So these are the spring, the qualities of young life grabbing a hold and becoming individuated, like the cutting of the umbilical cord isn't like a kind of an Aries image. The baby becomes independent, even if it's just still an infant and totally dependent on upon its mother. We're always dependent upon things. But Aries is a sign with the rulers of Mars and the exaltation of the sun that often emphasize the path, the destiny, the blazing of trails, the pioneering, the entrepreneur, the risk taker, the soldier, the warrior, often the hero, and the part of us that is always seeking to self-actualize. So all of this energy, including a Mercury retrograde in Aries, has us looking at a lot of these themes right now. And a solar eclipse is like a very potent version of a new moon in that it is here to start something new, plant a seed. Tropical signs, the four signs associated with the equinoxes and solstices, that would be Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. They are all called tropical. From the word tropos, which means to turn, like a turning point. Aries is the turning point of the solar year from the zodiacal standpoint in the Northern Hemisphere, where the symbolic language comes from, in which the light takes over from the darkness for the rest of for this half of the year. It's like now we're on the light half. That's the yang half. That's the half that is associated with the metaphysical principles of light, which aren't any better or worse than yin or darkness or the feminine. There's a story that plays out archetypally between opposites. The whole language of the zodiac is rooted in this story. So in Aries, we have a turning point toward light. What is light? Well, light can be so many different things. It can be the will. It can be the individuality. It can be all of these things we've been mentioning have a strong association with yang, to become separate, apart, individual, to separate rather than join in relationship, to stand out and apart as opposed to commingle and relate. Those are yang principles. And they're within all of us. It doesn't matter about gender. Gender, sex categories are completely fluid. These categories we're talking about are metaphysical. So the principle of an Aries eclipse is a solar eclipse is about tremendous energy behind this impetus to individuate, to start new things, to strike out with bold, assertive, aggressive actions. It's competitive at times, honestly. But it also says, I'm going to face fears with courage. I'm going to act decisively on behalf of new impulses and desires that are forming. I found out recently, I was watching this video I found where they were talking about the etymology of words and desire. The word desire came from desidere, which means something like from the stars or so anyway, I can't remember. I think maybe I shared that already with you guys. I have zero memory at this point, I guess. But anyway, so yeah, desire comes from the stars. It comes from an ancient view that our desires and whether or not they will be fulfilled rests in the power of the gods and the stars. Aries signals the beginning of new desires that are planted in the heart that we're going to act on. And they come as dramatic turning points with solar eclipses in Aries. Now, take all of that and let's now interpret the Mars-Saturn significations in the background that rule this eclipse. Right, so if this is a Marsy eclipse, a fiery, spring-like Aries Marsy eclipse, what is Mars doing? Mars is conjoining Saturn in Pisces, where we have things like the refinement of the will, the prohibiting of the will, the maturing of the will. We have great, tremendous situations that could call for some kind of militaristic activity or response. Now, that could be just psychological, doesn't have to be literal warfare. But the call to arms psychically, the feeling that we have to work through some kind of prohibiting or limiting or frustrating factor as Saturn and Mars come together, that we have to deal with fears and constraints and doubts and various conservative elements that we have to try to push through, but also maybe do some compromising with. You see, so everything we said about Saturn and Mars is a qualifying hurdle that we're having to sort of jump over, or it's a ball of energy that we have to somehow sit and contemplate as this sort of Aryan new beginning tries to establish itself. So now, the other thing that's really important to look at here, this is all greatly amplified by the fact that Mars and Saturn, as they conjoin this week as the ruler of the eclipse, are in the domicile of Jupiter, that's Pisces, one of its two domiciles, and they are in the bound of Jupiter as well. What is Jupiter doing? Wodey-dodey. Jupiter is about to conjoin Uranus. Now we're cooking with fire, right? Because they are in the bound of Jupiter, they are acting on behalf of things that they believe in. They're acting on behalf of virtues, or they're acting on behalf of beliefs. That is for sure one of the potential significations. So this gives you a kind of holy war, Joan of Arc type of feeling behind this eclipse. You might be ready to go to battle or war. You might be trying to start something new, but being faced with people or things that are challenging your beliefs or challenging you to act on behalf of them or to stand strong in some kind of principled conviction about something that's happening around you. Jupiter is also about to conjoin Uranus in Taurus, which, by the way, has the signification of breakthrough and revolution behind it. Now, this is happening, of course, in Venus's sign, but Venus is in Mars's sign, and Mars is in Venus's exaltation. I suspect that behind all of this is the difficulty of trying to make important changes, start new things in the way that Aries likes to start, but that we're dealing with principled conflicts that ideally we would like to resolve peacefully with other people. Is it possible? Is it not possible? We'll see. Another way of looking at this would be to say that when Mars and Saturn are acting together in Jupiter's term and or bound and domicile, and Jupiter's about to conjoin Uranus, that this conflict, this challenge, this pressure cooker of Mars-Saturn this week behind the eclipse is fueling some kind of principled actions that are, you know, they're behind an even larger and bigger impetus than just the solar eclipse in Aries, but the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, which means that this new thing we're trying to start is really the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in Taurus. And, you know, so let me just back that up a second, so in case it doesn't make sense. You could say, well, you know, the sun in Aries is trying to start something new and it's very Aries-like. That would be totally fair for a solar eclipse in Aries. But then you have to combine the ruler. Okay, well, it's trying to start something in an Aries-like way, but it's also dealing with the Mars and Saturn in Pisces kind of conflict or frustration or challenge that it has to work through. It can be very watery, emotional, rooted in things like your beliefs and ideals and visions. But when that Mars-Saturn conjunction is simultaneously in the bound and domicile of Jupiter, and Jupiter is in a rare conjunction with Uranus, then I think we can safely say that what's really happening here is we are having there are some very strong energies that are behind the impetus to revolutionize that Jupiter-Uranus represents. It's because it's all coming together in the next, you know, 10 days, you know, 12 days. Jupiter-Uranus likes to create sudden, tremendous breakthroughs. It is principled and defiant, but because Jupiter is principled. People always think of Jupiter as, oh, it's just expansion. Jupiter was Zeus. You know, Jupiter was the ruler of law and societal order and religion and institutions of higher learning. Jupiter is this kind of virtuous, the principle of like, you know, a fair and just government, a fair and just legal system, human rights and dignity. Those are the best qualities of Jupiter. I'm not saying that we live up to those things. And certainly the institutions that are supposed to represent those things are often totally corrupt in our world. But as a planet, as a god, Jupiter represents the cohesion of our world and our cosmos as a well-ordered, beautiful, sort of symmetrical thing. Now, is that all there is? No, there's a reason that Jupiter's, you know, underworld brother is Hades, right? And that's important. That's a really important dichotomy in ancient mythology and in ancient philosophy, right? That Hades and Zeus are like opposites. They occupy different worlds, the underworld and the overworld. Oh, it's nice and sunny and well-ordered up here. Well, in Hades, things are literally described as everything is upside down. Did you know that? So anyway, but Jupiter at its best, conjoining Uranus, the sort of Promethean principle, is about breakthroughs that are in the name of Venusian things like peace, beauty, rest, luxury, wealth, stability, ease. And Jupiter-Uranus is saying more of that. And I'm, you know, it's a revolutionary and sort of defiant impulse with Jupiter and Uranus. Well, that's coming through at the same time that this solar eclipse in Aries, very Mars-like, very fired up about trying to strike forward in very strong, active, aggressive, assertive ways, while Saturn and Mars are together in Pisces, wrestling with intense and not so, you know, like complex emotional territory, where we're entangled with other people in webs of love and respect, while there are probably things like very different values and beliefs that are conflicting as well. So you have this, that although the Jupiter Taurus or Jupiter Uranus conjunction in Taurus looks very sort of like a peaceful revolutionary situation, like, oh, that looks really kind of nice. Yeah, at the same time, it's being fueled by some really intense and complicated looking conflict at the moment. Now, I believe that will all resolve, or we're going to be moving into, I mean, this is our sort of phase one of the Jupiter Uranus conjunction. Let me just show you something that happens afterward. So if you take a look, if we move this forward a little bit to the actual Jupiter Uranus conjunction on April 19th into the 20th, the Sun enters Taurus. Not long after that, Mercury stations direct and Venus enters Taurus. And then not long after that, we'll have eventually also Mercury entering Taurus. So like things do calm down. I mean, we get everything moving into a stable Earth sign. We also have this super lovely looking new moon. Let me show you this one. This is kind of nice. New moon in Taurus right around May 8th. Might be just a touch before that. Yeah, it's going to be like late May 7th. You can see that. There's Venus in Taurus, the new moon in Taurus, exalted new moon in Taurus. Jupiter and Uranus are just separating within 3 degrees. You know, Mercury's direct. It's like it is, and Mars is in its own domicile by that point as well. My point is that like there are greener pastures, and I do believe that the revolution of Jupiter and Uranus is leading to, probably for many of us, it will like legitimately lead to a stabler, more peaceful kind of situation. And maybe one that is, you know, where we've stabilized and done some healing work in Venusian territories like relationships, art, sensuality, pleasure. But right now, you know, we're in eclipse season, and as you can see, like the lay of the land is turbulent. You know, this week especially with Mars and Saturn conjoining in Pisces, you have to remember the double-bodied water sign is it reminds me of the Knight of Cups in the tarot. You know, you have a kind of chivalrous, crusading, romantic, and very principled and sometimes even fanatical and sort of crazy religious side to Pisces, a visionary and romantic quality to Pisces. And when Mars and Saturn are behind that with an Aries eclipse, it's like, ooh, there's very strong feelings at work here. And maybe some are that are like almost fanatical. And then you're pairing that with the revolutionary impulse of Mars, Saturn being ruled so strongly by Jupiter, who's conjoining with Uranus. What we will do for the name of peace, for the name of prosperity. I mean, there are famous examples of Tauruses throughout history who have been ruthless, Adolf Hitler being one of them, right? So some people imagine a golden age, a golden era of peace and prosperity, but only for the right people, you know, and like death to everyone else. So and I'm not saying that any of us are, you know, on that level of monstrosity, right? But we have to be careful of the shadows of what we're desiring and the lengths we're willing to go and the bridges we might be willing to burn. I think there is something about this right now that says like, just steady, you know, like just walk through this conflict with a principled but moderate, you know, the revolution. Can it come peacefully? Can it come because you have worked through a pressure cooker and not lost your cool and worked to resolve conflicts and to harmonize. You know, I just recently watched this movie. It was a movie about Bob Marley, and I think it was produced by some of his family members or something. I just thought, well, this kind of looks like a fun thing to watch. So I like Bob Marley. And I was impressed. I don't know. I'm not like a Bob Marley historian, and I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to make him into a saint or anything, but I was very impressed by some of the choices that he made around trying to be something of a political peacemaker in Jamaica. That was sort of the point of the movie. And there was like a lot of danger and violence involved in doing that. And he had this strong belief that music could bring people together and could heal things. And anyway, I was thinking, well, this is very appropriate that I'm watching this kind of musical reggae revolutionary around the time that Jupiter and Uranus are coming together in a Venus ruled Earth sign. Makes a lot of sense. So I think what we're dealing with is what we will do in the name of things that we find to be beautiful or stable or peaceful or luxurious. You know, what will we do in the name of Venus, so to speak? And the look of things this week is like we might do more than we should. Like we might be there could be a little bit of craziness at work. So, and on the other hand, there's something about a very kind of like a mature management of desires and emotions that lead to careful mediation of conflicts or conflicting desires, even within ourselves, that maybe finally allow us to really experience a powerful breakthrough by the time Jupiter and Uranus come through. Anyway, I've been just sort of rambling with these reflections. The last thing I'll say is the other really important factor behind this Mars-Saturn conjunction is right as they conjoin, look at what else happens. Let me take this back just a little bit. So we have Mars and Saturn coming together. You can see them at the bottom of the chart there. Right after they come together and separate by Thursday of this week, and I'll be doing a separate video on this one, Mercury goes through its kazemi at the heart of the sun. That resetting, that rebirthing of Mercury moving into the morning star position is really important. So I'm going to do a whole separate video on the Mercury kazemi this week because I've got a bunch of other things to say about it. And some specific significations I think go along with it. But one of them has to do with, you know, feeling empowered, but also being careful of the wise use of our will, you know. And so we're going to talk about that anyway with a little bit more care in a future video this week. So that comes through on Thursday, right after the ruler of the eclipse, Mars, is done with the conjunction to Saturn. So anyway, I hope that this was useful for you guys and interesting and prepares you with some, fresh ways of thinking about the energies of the week. It's always a pleasure to break these things down. And I've really been enjoying like layering and giving you more context this year. It's been sort of a point of mine that came up in my reflections during the Kickstarter at the end of the year. I always try to think about what can I do differently in the year ahead. And I've decided this year, I really want to try to give you extra layers of context. So we can all grow in our understanding and development of a solar eclipse. You know, like there's a lot more to just the solar eclipse and the fact that it's happening in Aries. Anyway, that's it for today. Stick around afterwards. After I sign off, you'll hear a recording that I tagged on to the end of the video where I talk about the upcoming first year program. Come study astrology. Studying astrology is absolutely amazing. It completely transforms your life, whether you go professional or not, to dive into this ancient spiritual worldview and practice, which you can take forward into your life like absolutely any other kind of practice. And it makes a huge difference. It's like adding a spiritual GPS to your car or something. It's truly amazing to study astrology in depth. So I welcome and invite you to check it out. And make sure you check out the need-based tuition as well. I'll say more about that in the video. All right, that's it for now. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends, but if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient Hermetic, sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, you know, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, you know, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session, and then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. It's available all the way up to the start of the program. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.